Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side. And while he dismissed the crowds, and after he had dismissed them, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You have little faith. Why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Rescue me. I am drowning in doubt. I cannot see you. Water's deep. I've been treading too long. Now I'm sinking. Will you let me see if you are there? Will you rescue me if you are there?
Just a couple hours after worship last Sunday, we learned that the Kansas City Royals clinched a spot in the wild card game of the American League. It's been 29 years since my Kansas City Royals were in the playoffs. I was 8 years old when it happened. And so I did what anyone would do that loves the Royals. I texted my dad and brother and said, "Are you guys going to the game?" It turns out for them it's like a 25-minute drive, but for me it's a long flight. And they said, "Maybe." And I said, "Can you get me a ticket?" And they said, "Serious?" And then I had to pause and I had to call Sarah and say, "So what do we have going on these next couple of days?" And to check the schedule of how do we figure out life if I get on a plane and fly away for a couple of days. And so we checked frequent flyer miles and then checked StubHub. I checked the weather to make sure we weren't going to get rained out, because that would have really sucked to have flown all the way there, rain out, come back. And the next morning, Tuesday, I got on. Before the sun came up, I was on Southwest Airlines heading to Kansas City. And so I was picked up by my dad and my brother. And at 2 o'clock, we headed downtown. And we went to Arthur Bryant's, because that's what you do when you get to Kansas City. And I sat in a chair that I imagined was the same one that President Obama sat in just a couple weeks ago. I don't actually know where he sat, but he sat in that chair. And then we made our way out to Kauffman Stadium. And the stadium opened at 5, but my dad is a little bit antsy, so we got there about 4:15. And we parked and we waited in a long line, along with probably almost all of the dads and sons in all of Kansas City that had come to the game. It was crazy. It was electric. We were there for all of batting practice. So we got to stand out in left field with the hope of we might get a ball. And then I had to like, hold, that kid is 7 years old. Can I really knock him down? Maybe. Like, I might. So that's what we did. It was a sea of blue. It was phenomenal. We sat in the first row of the upper deck on the left field side. The energy was palpable. The chants were deafening. And it was a really good game for six innings. And then Brandon Moss hit a fastball over the right field fence, and the A's were up by three. And that was with nobody out in the seventh. And then they added another run. So the Kansas City Royals can't score eight runs in a series, much less in a single game. So the possibility that we were going to come back was like smaller than slim to none. So I don't care what everybody says that they never lost hope. I sat out there going, oh, are you kidding me? I flew all the way here. Like, I'm a loyal Royal fan to the point of absurdity, but I flew all the way here, and it's not even a good game. So then I started to be afraid. Well, I wasted money and time. I started to be afraid that I had put hope in this small market team. And if God is going to be on the side of anybody during a baseball playoffs, it is on the side of a small market team that can't buy its way to a championship, but instead bunts and steals to try to get things done. Because I think that's actually how Jesus came into the world. Not on the side of empire and the teams that were on the dynasty, but on the side of the folks in the Midwest that folks just kind of fly past to get to New York, right? And so was that foolish to put your hope in a team like that? Well, what I know was that the energy just deflated. And kind of like at this moment, you could hear a pin drop in a stadium filled with 40,000 people that just 15 minutes ago, you could hardly hear the person next to you speaking. The Royals needed a miracle. At least they needed an unexpected triple off the wall in the 12th, followed by a single by Salvador Perez down the line. So here's what was happening. It's the 12th inning, and it's tied. And Salvador Perez is up. So the entire stadium, 40,000 people, are chanting Salvador Perez's name. Salvi, 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 over and over. It's Spanish for savior. We were chanting 40,000 people, save us, save us. 29 years that we've been waiting to go on in the playoffs. Like, at this pace, this is going to be my only shot. Because 29 years from now, who knows? So we were chanting. He'd already let us down twice that same night. But people weren't giving up at this moment. They just kept repeating his name. And his name means Savior. The story that we're going to spend time in these next 3 weeks in worship, it has at the center of it Peter's cry out for Jesus, which is, save me. I don't know what it was like when he cried out, but I know what it sounded like for 40,000 people to scream out, to yell out for somebody to save them. And the reality is that in this story, this is the very center of the Gospel of Matthew. If you take this text and you look not at the English words, but at the Greek, there's the same number of words before save me as there are after save me. Save me is at the very center of this. And this is at the very center of the Gospel of Matthew. And the reason is that fear is everywhere. Fear is all around in their day. Much like we were sitting up there, like Salvador Perez has already struck out twice. I'm putting hope in this, but it seems really unlikely. Because if this guy just throws him a curveball, he's done. But he didn't. Save me. It's at the center of this story, and fear is all around it. In Jesus' day, this is what it looked like. See, Herod, who's the ruler of that time, Herod has just murdered John the Baptist. John the Baptist is the one that Jesus is going to. He's Jesus' mentor and friend and cousin. And Herod thinks that Jesus is John the Baptist raised from the dead. So you can imagine the kind of fear that Herod would have as he puts out a bounty on Jesus and the disciples. So they miraculously have this meal that just keeps extending and extending and extending, and more people are welcome to the table. And guess what that does? It calls more attention to them. So I'm guessing that their fear rises. Because John the Baptist's life has already been taken. And so I think it's out of that place of fear that Jesus sends the disciples on to the other side. Get in the boat and go. I'm going to go by myself. I'm going to go up this mountain. I think in his mind must have been on some level, this is it. I'm going to be arrested too. So I'm going to send them on. My life is probably coming to an end. And I think the disciples were thinking something really similar to that. Because what happens is they get out on the boat and they see this being walking toward them on the water and they think it's Jesus's ghost. So not unlike Herod, they think that Jesus has been killed and that here is his ghost coming out to them. And it's a pretty reasonable thing to think because it's 4 o'clock in the morning and they're out on this small vessel at sea with the winds crashing against them. There's a huge storm and a ghost right in front of them. You've been dreary-eyed at 4 a.m. You're looking out and you don't know what you see, but it's not what you think it is. And Jesus says, take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid. That's how we translate it anyways. But another way to say it is to take courage. See, the word courage and heart, it can be either of those things. The Greek word could. In Mark's version, though, it's different. This story appears in different places in the New Testament. And in Mark's version of it, Jesus says, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? But this time, Jesus says, have courage. So there is something in this version that says courage and faith are connected. They have something to do with one another. So what is that that Jesus is wanting Peter and the disciples to feel or to know? It seems to me that Jesus is saying something about living our lives from our hearts. You're going to have to lead and live and love with your heart, Peter. You know who I am deep down in your heart. You know me and you know that I'll be there. Trust that. Trust your heart. Root your life in grace. That's how we say it here at the table. Root your life in grace. Take heart. Have courage. That's what we're doing as we gather here each Sabbath for worship together. We turn ourselves toward the divine. We come together to remind one another of God's love and beauty and power and justice. And we take heart and we have courage, crying out for God to save us. We remind ourselves that deep down in our hearts, we know that God's love extends even to us. That God invites all to the table and says, all will mean all. Carrie Newcomer sang it, and we heard Casey sing her words. No matter who you are, no matter where you're from, there's room at the table for everyone. Here and now, we can be beloved community. There is room for us all. No gift is too small. There is enough if we share. Come on up and pull a chair. Room at the table for everyone. See, God's vision is bold, and to live that out is going to take courage and heart. So while I was in Kansas City this week, a person from Sacramento that I've known for a number of years, she's not part of this church community, she texted and messaged with me. She needed to talk. And I was away, and so we set it up to where when I arrived back on Thursday, we were going to connect together, and we were going to have a meal and share. I could feel in her messages the anxiety, the fear that was going on in her life. I didn't know what it was, but I could feel it. And so we got together, and she's in the midst of a terrible storm. And when she really started to share about it, it was a storm that didn't start last night at 4 a.m., but it's been going on for years, what feels like decades. She's caught in waves of addiction and winds of destruction, and she's literally feeling lost, and she's crying out, not unlike Peter, save me. In our blueprint class, we talk about this story of John Wesley, who's the founder of the movement that became Methodism, and when we look at his story, this is how the Methodist movement began. A small group of people came to him, and they said, save us. He says they were groaning for redemption. So they cried out. They were lost at sea as well. 5 years ago, we were just a couple of families that were gathering in this space. And on some level, I think we were crying out to be saved as well. For a lot of us, we held our emotions just under the surface. We didn't allow ourselves to go to those deeper places because we were afraid. But we longed for salvation. We longed for a different way of being church. We wanted to know, could we really be a church that puts a sign up that says God's love is for all and all means all, and then try to live that out? Or are we going to go the way of every other church where we become little cliques and everybody's in it for themselves? And we didn't know, but we hoped. We hoped that there could be another way of following Jesus. Could we really be vulnerable with one another, with ourselves, to put all of our lives on the table and really listen to that? And I don't know if we were ready, but I think we were ready enough that in the midst of that fear, in the midst of the storms, in the waves of the dysfunction that is our own lives, we started to gather together. And I don't think the fears ever really go away. I think we kept wondering and probably still do. We kept gathering. And then 4 years ago, there were around 60 of us in a typical worship. We've about tripled that number now. A simple banner that says all means all, God's abundant love is for everyone. There's room at the table. It brought so many of you to this place to taste this community, to taste God's love, maybe for the first time. I don't know what brought you here, but I sense that the chaos of life and the relentlessness of the waves brought many of you to this place. In meeting with my friend on Thursday, I'm more convinced than ever that there is a deep need for a place like this little church at this moment in time. People like my friend, like many of us in this room, are struggling and we're filled with fear. And sometimes it's on the surface because we keep it at bay. We might not have the words to say, save me. So instead, we seek a friend and we say, I don't know who else to talk with. But I need to say this out loud. I'm in trouble. I want to change and I can't. I'm not one to think that I'm having a spiritual crisis, but here I am. We know that there's a simplicity and an intimacy to gathering in this worshiping community on Sunday mornings. We know that that simplicity and that intimacy allows us to come together like the disciples at sea. And sometimes we're paddling and the direction doesn't seem clear and the winds are shaking us. And at other moments, it feels like the way is opening and broadening and we're actually rowing together. See, in order to ensure that people in this neighborhood and beyond have room at the table, we're beginning to imagine something kind of crazy. Like waking up on or going to sleep Sunday night, not sure that you're going to get up on Tuesday to go to Kansas City, but you did. We're starting to imagine a second Sunday morning worship gathering. We know that right now, when we gather in this space, we have room for about 200 people. We don't imagine this happening right away, but sometime early next year, we imagine starting having two worship gatherings, one at 9, one at 9:30, one at 11. It means all of us shifting things up a little bit to make room at the table for all of God's people who find themselves, like you have at different moments in your life, looking for some calm in the midst of a stormy life. I want to invite you to just think of the people who live around you or who are in your school or who work around you, who feel lost at sea and they don't know where to turn. Think of the storms of life that brought you here. Maybe you saw that All Means All banner and you thought, could that include me too? I want to say that I don't really imagine us growing beyond two worshiping communities or two worship gatherings on Sunday mornings. But I do think that in a couple of years, we'll be ready to send 15 or 25 people out to another part of Sacramento. Or maybe out to the east somewhere, out 80. Or I'm looking at people that are like out toward West Sacramento and all the way out 80 and all the way down 50. Like maybe we'll be ready to send 15 or 25 people out to plant something new in that space that says all means all and invites everyone to the table. I do think that we'll be ready to do that in a few more years. And so there you are. You're already having some fears that you bring to this space, and now I've just increased the anxiety. You're going to what? You're going to what? Exactly. Seventh inning, John Lester's on the mound. We're in trouble, people. I don't know if I can bring us back. But I think we can. See, some of the fears that I imagine that it brings up are things like this. We'll lose the intimacy if we have two worship services. I want to acknowledge that it will feel different because as we continue to grow, the people who will be with us early next year are not the exact same people that are with us right now. And so on some level, the intimacy does shift. It changes. But the truth is that 2 years ago, the same people weren't sitting next to you. Even 2 months ago, the same people weren't sitting next to you. Part of the beauty of being this eclectic community that we believe God is calling us to be is to continue to welcome more and more people to the table. So instead of one worship service, we imagine two. And if you think back, some of you were in this space when we went from one kitchen table to two. And I haven't had anybody come to me in the last couple of years and say, you know, that decision was really wrongheaded. We should not have started two kitchen tables. Now we have, I don't know, 12 or 13 that are intimate places for people to gather together. And I know that in my own life, what I need is both. I need newness coming in so that I can be expanded and challenged. And then I also need places that are stable and secure that I can watch over others in love and I can grow in faith in that way. And I don't think that the two are mutually exclusive. Instead, I think we need to hold them together in tension. So that is our hope. That's our hope of how we'll continue to be this eclectic community that God is bringing together through and in our own differences to follow in the ways of Jesus. And it's going to take courage and heart to go in those directions. See, Jesus calls back when they're in the midst of that fear. It is I, is how it's written in English. But there's beauty in the Greek because it's actually just I am that calls back. And so in that simple phrase, Jesus says, I am. He's hearkening all the way back to when God identifies God's self as I am. And Jesus says, in that moment, I am. In whatever storm you find yourself in, I am. I am with you in this, calling back. And then Jesus encourages the disciples. Brené Brown calls it, lead and live a wholehearted life. And I think that's what Jesus had in mind when he calls back to them. And I think that wholehearted life is what people had in mind as they started this church. And they called it Asbury Chapel down in 1850. And then folks in the 1920s started to think about, where did the people go? How do we keep staying in relationship, deep relationship with one another? I think a wholehearted life is what we found when we started to gather a few years ago and to experience resurrection. And I hope that it's what we're experiencing now as we continue to gather together in search of wholehearted lives. And I believe that what we need in order to find that is to be together in worship in the way that we are right now. To remind ourselves of God's love that meets us in the midst of the storms of life and says, take heart, have courage, I am. God has bold dreams for you and for me and for this church. God's vision for this place will require us to take heart and to have courage, to root our lives in grace as we lead and live wholehearted lives. And in the coming year, we know that we will experience rough waters. Some of us might be called to step out of the boat in faith, and we'll have to root ourselves and trust that Jesus is going to be there reaching out for us when we least expect it, but we most need it. You might be like my friend. You don't know where to turn. You just know that you need some help. You know that you can't do it on your own. And my hope is that our worship always says, there's room at the table, and God will meet you there. It's one of the reasons that we do this, and it's not how every church does it. So I want to say a couple words about it, because if you're with us for the first time or you're with us just over the last couple of months, this may not make sense to you. But it's in your worship folders, and it's called a deep commitment card. Most churches ask people to make to answer one question every fall. And the question is, how much money will you contribute to help our church over the next year? It's a simple question, and it's an important question, the truth is, because you have to budget, you have to figure out where you're going. You don't have to. It's helpful to budget. It's helpful to figure out where you're heading. But we want to know more than that about where you are and who you are and how you want to be in relationship with this community. You'll see on this card on the front side, it says, rooted in grace. How do you hope to root your life in grace? And that's what we're focusing on this morning. On the back, how do you hope to grow in faith and to reach in love? And then how do you hope to support through your generosity the ministries of this church? And so each week over the next couple, we're going to work our way through this. Pastor Linda and I use this to help shape and craft worship for the next year. We started to talk a lot about witnessing to our faith because a lot of people in our room were like, I don't know how to talk about my faith. So we've tried to spend time around that. And whatever is working on our people right now, we want that to shape how we worship together in the coming year. The next couple of weeks, we're going to move through the other parts of this about growing in faith and reaching in love. And then at the end of the month, we're going to celebrate baptism. And it looks like right now we have 8 adults that want to be baptized this month. And we have 5 or 6 children that are ready to be baptized at the end of this month. And I want to say that's amazing, but there might be other folks that are in this room that are thinking, I want to take that next step too. And I hope you'll join us after worship to talk a little bit about it. I hope that you'll take time with these cards. That's why we give them out now. We want you to have time with your partner or on your own to fill these cards out and to reflect on the depth of the commitment you want to make to God and to one another. See, God calls us to wholehearted lives of courage and of hope. And so worship and prayer are two of the critical ways that we remind ourselves of that. And so when you think about your hopes for your deep commitment for rooting your life in grace, I want you to think about that. How is it that you want to be in prayer? How is it that you want to be in worship? What does that look like for you? Maybe you're a person that shows up at Christmas and Easter and you happen to be here today because grandma's in town. Like maybe for you, a deep commitment is being here on a regular basis when you're not out of town. Or maybe you're a person who's here every Sunday, but you want to show up differently. You want to deepen what it's like to be here. We want to invite you to hold those questions, to reflect on that. Maybe you're a person that your whole life, I know we have a lot of people that are running the urban cow, whatever it's called now, half marathon. I had 2 of them email me this morning, like, I'm praying for 13.1 miles. Maybe that's what your prayer life looks like. I don't know, but I want you to hold that, to reflect on it. There's room at the table for you, no matter what storms you're navigating. See, the wild card game at Kauffman Stadium, it made it perfectly reasonable for 40,000 people to cry out together for a Savior. 40,000 people could do that. And we hope that this morning at the table and every time that you're in this place, that you'll feel that same permission to cry out in whatever fears you have that God is answering, I am. That God is holding you, saying, take heart and have courage. Live that wholehearted life. We were chanting Salve on Tuesday night, looking for redemption. And I thought that salvation, I thought that the hope in that moment was his base hit down the line. And what I came to realize was that the place of actual salvation in that for me was there all along. Had the Royals won or lost, the truth was I had made the crazy decision to go back and invest in my relationship with my dad, with my brother, like a lot of other people in that stadium. And that love was there all along. But the reality is I often go through life and I don't even notice it. We call that crazy. But we don't notice that we go through relationships without really holding them, investing in them. And so what I wonder is if that's a lot like grace. Like maybe that grace is there with us all the time. God's unconditional yes, all means all, even you holding us in the midst of those storms, saying we're in this together. See, I think that was the real moment. We were saying salve, but what we were holding was grace in the midst of all of those relationships that were being held. So why do we need an excuse of a baseball game? Why not just live into that right now? As we move and as we gather around this table, may we remember, may we surrender to that grace that holds us and keeps us, whether it's a planned out decision or it's something totally spontaneous, may we look around and notice the grace that sustains us now and always.
Those living in the margins, there is room at the table for everyone. This is where it all begins. This is how we gather in. There is room at the table for everyone. Done, but there is room at the table for everyone. Let us sink a new world in. This is how it all begins. There is room at the table for everyone. There is room for us all, and no gift is too small. There is room at the table for everyone. There's enough if we share. Come on, pull up a chair. There is room at the table for everyone.